understand.
Welcome to Opinion Riot. My name is Brian Ramsdell. I am your host. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. With 100,000 plus titles to choose from, you're bound to find something that you like. Go to audibletrial.com/opinionriot to get your free audiobook download. That's audibletrial.com/opinionriot. And you can send us emails to the show with questions or comments at opinionriot@hotmail.com. You can also follow us or tweet us on Twitter at Opinion Riot. I'm all by myself here today doing the podcast, which is totally fine, but I have kind of a ulterior motive, you might say. I consider myself a cinephile or a movie buff, and I have seen quite a few movies in my day.
Come back, Shane! Shane, come back!
10 points to you if you get that reference. But there's also a lot of movies that I haven't seen. And a lot of movies that I'm kind of embarrassed that I haven't seen. There's been, you know, many occasions that a scenario such as this has happened, where I'm conversating with somebody and they say, "Oh, hey, remember that part in Jaws when they say, 'We're gonna need a bigger boat'? Wasn't that hilarious?" And one of two things happens. Either I lie and say, "Oh, yeah, that was awesome, totally great part of the movie," and just hope they don't continue talking. Or I tell them the truth and I say, "I've never actually seen Jaws," which is usually followed by them going, "What? I can't believe you haven't seen Jaws. It's like, it's Jaws, man. What the hell?" So this has happened to me so many times that I have quite an extensive list in going kind of in the back burner in my brain of movies that are like this that pretty much everybody else in the whole entire world has seen except for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start watching these movies, and I'm going to start making these kind of these mini short bonus episodes where I will watch one or two movies a week probably and put one of these up a week, and I will kind of give a synopsis and kind of a little review of the movie that I watch. So it'll kind of hopefully inspire people that are in the same boat as me to maybe go and watch the movie that I watch and review, or maybe they have a list like this going in their head where they can, you know, hear my podcast and say, "Oh, hey, I've been always meaning to watch this movie," and then they go and watch it so that they can, you know, have that under their belt and they can get the cultural references that come from it, or they can get the enjoyment out of it that everybody else has gotten. So I guess I can just jump right into it. I watched two movies for this episode. The first movie was Beverly Hills Cop. I know, I've never seen Beverly Hills Cop until this morning. So it was really good. I enjoyed it. It was came out in 1984, and Eddie Murphy is the star, of course, as Axel Foley, and it's kind of a like renegade cop crime drama with a little bit of comedy thrown in, and I think it holds up. Almost 30 years old, and I think it still is quite entertaining today. I guess one of the first things that I noticed about it was the iconic theme song, the Axel F. song that was composed for the movie by Harold Faltermeyer, I think it is, and very iconic synth instrumental song that plays all throughout the movie. It's so prominent in the movie, they play it all the time. It's all over the place. They're like sneaking into a warehouse, or they're driving over this way, or they're driving to this building, or going over here. It's always playing, but it's not like it's a bad thing, because it's a pretty good song. It's catchy, and it's fun to listen to. So and speaking of that, I remember that song playing on the radio when I was a kid. Because I was born in 1986, so 2 years after this movie came out. And I remember, I have no idea how old I was, but I'd be driving around with my dad, and whatever radio station he used to listen to, he would have it on a station that would play that song. And I knew that I liked the song before I knew anything about the movie, anything like that. I knew I liked the song, because every time it would come on, I would tell him to turn it up. Like, turn it up, Dad. And I think it was probably one of the first instrumentals that I ever heard, because I think I distinctly remember asking him why there wasn't any singing in the song. But I didn't mind, because I thought it was cool. So, like I said before, it's got some comedy sprinkled throughout, because it's Eddie Murphy, so you know he's going to crack wise every once in a while. So, but I think it's got some really good jokes that are, I don't know if they're timeless, but at least they still work today, like when I watched it. And I'm sure they still have the same kind of comedic effect that they did in 1984, where, you know, it's just Eddie Murphy cracking wise, and it's a joke that's obviously scripted, but it kind of just seems like something that he would say, and it seems really natural. And I think that just makes it that much more funny. I'm not sure. There's one part that I wrote down. I took a note, and it's he's driving up to this country club, and he's driving this old, dilapidated, beat up Chevy Nova that's got dents and scratches and rust all over it. And he pulls up into the valet spot behind this black shiny Mercedes, and the valet opens the door, and Eddie Murphy hands him the key, and he says, "Hey, make sure you park this in a good spot. All this shit happened last time I was here," implying that they're the ones who fucked up this car, which is obviously not the case. But it was funny. It was funny the moment I laughed out loud, and I'm sure it's been funny for anybody else who was the first time watching it. Let's see. There were, there were a couple downsides to the movie, which I'm sure are only because of its age. And I think I lost a little bit watching it now as opposed to, any time in the past. Because the entire plot seemed kind of formulaic. Like, it was a cop that was getting busted and in trouble in his hometown or his home precinct, and then got, you know, put on vacation or whatever and sent somewhere else. And so he is told to stay off the case, but investigates the case anyway. And the only way to, you know, win back the affection of his superior officer is to solve the case. And of course he has to do sneaking around and breaking in order to do that. And it's kind of a plot device that's been done probably 100 times, but I don't know where this falls on the timeline, since it's almost 30 years old. It could be maybe one of the first movies to do something like that, or kind of like in the heyday of when a lot of movies were having like a formula or a plot kind of like that. So, but I think it was still effective, even though it was formulaic. It was still effective. And one of the other things that I noticed about it was that that the back, like, third, I was drawing I was drawing parallels between it and Scarface, which came out a year previous from Brian De Palma, with, you know, Al Pacino. He plays the cocaine drug dealer, mafia guy, crazy, and the main bad guy in Beverly Hills Cop was a cocaine smuggler, and also they have a giant shootout at a big mansion with palm trees all over the place, and security guards with machine guns, and it just seemed like there was a lot of similarities between that and the end of Scarface, where they're having the shootout. But I don't know if that was on purpose, because it was only a year later, but it seemed pretty similar. But I think it was still good. It was still effective. It was still a really good ending. Still carried suspense. So I would say that this movie still holds up. It's still an entertaining movie. If you got an hour and 15 minutes to spare and you want to sit down and watch a solid movie from the 80s, I would definitely recommend it. Because, like, if you're in the same boat as me and you hadn't seen it, but you'd heard people talk about it or whatever, then I would definitely check it out. Okay, so, pardon me. The second movie I watched was Planet of the Apes, the original from 1968 with Charlton Heston. And this movie is spectacular, I gotta tell you. From 1968, like, it has stuff in it that I was really surprised by. Like, the first thing I could say is that overall, the entire plot, and especially the plot twist at the end, which I won't give away in case you haven't watched this, you were in the same boat as me. The plot twist at the end, I can't even imagine being a viewer going to the movie theater in 1968 and watching this movie, and with all the plot twists and all the great story that it has, I would just, my mind would be blown. It would be totally blown in 1968. Because I was, like, surprised by it now. I kind of knew, you know, kind of how the plot carries and, like, what happens, but it was still kind of, it worked so well, and, like, all the pieces fell into place the way they were supposed to. Nothing seemed confusing, and it was just, it was really, really good. And as far as, like, I think one of the biggest concerns when you get talking about movies that are that old is that, and especially in that kind of genre where it's like a sci-fi, is that, like, the practical effects as opposed to, like, CG effects. And I think the practical effects were still effective. Like, it's still the, like, the caps they had over their mouths that looked like the different mouth shapes for the apes. I could definitely see the actual actors' mouths moving underneath them, but it wasn't enough to take me out of it. Like, I could still picture them as an ape, like, talking, even though it was kind of goofy because they were, you know, standing up and they were very much like humans. But actually, that's kind of like part of the plot ish I guess. You kind of find that out towards the end, so I won't give that away. Just in case you're one of the four people out there that haven't watched Planet of the Apes from 1968. So I'll kind of get into the plot. The plot is super solid. It starts off with four astronauts, I guess you would say. They're in this spaceship, and they crash land on this unknown planet. And one of them dies in the crash, and they escape the pod. They're in water, and they go out, and they're walking around in the desert or whatever, and then they find these humans that are stealing corn out of this field, and then the apes show up, and the apes are wielding guns, and they're going crazy, and they kill one of the guys, and they capture the two remaining people, one of them being Charlton Heston. But in the process of being captured, Charlton Heston gets shot in the throat. So keep that in mind. And so you see him in kind of a cage in captivity. And there's these doctors, Zira and Cornelius. And they're trying to get Charlton Heston to do something, like trying to communicate with him. But he can't talk because he got shot in the throat. So at this point, you start to realize that they're having a switch. Like, this is the main plot device, is that it's a switch. Like, Charlton Heston is acting like apes do in the real world, and the apes are acting like humans do in the real world. And so it's kind of like a flip-flop. So Time passes and stuff happens, and they figure out that Charlton Heston can write. And so he's writing and he's telling all this story or whatever. And then he can start talking, and so now he's talking. And he, you know, is kind of getting smitten with this girl named Nova, who can't speak, who is one of the other humans that they have captive that they're doing experiments on or whatever. And so there are these elder apes, and one main one, I can't remember what his name is, but they're kind of trying to get all up in the you know, the scientists and the doctor's business about, like, what's going on with this these humans, and why are they acting different than the other ones or whatever. And they're, like, claiming heresy, and that, like, they're trying to say that what the apes believe and everything is that the doctors are trying to go against that, because they're saying that this human is different than the other humans, and he's capable of way other extraordinary things. And finally they kind of get driven away, like, after Charlton Heston, like, tries to escape 100 times. Him and Nova and Zira and Cornelius and Zira's nephew, who I can't remember what his name is also, but they escape. And they find this cave where they have artifacts, and then they're followed by one of the elder apes and a bunch of bandit apes and stuff. But when they're in this cave, it's like an archaeological dig that Cornelius has been doing, and it's kind of, you see the stories start to come together, and the plots start to thicken, because Cornelius has found all these things, all these artifacts, all these different things that he's dug up that are kind of proving a timeline for how this planet has come along, and how, what kind of civilizations and stuff have been there, and what kind of time frame it's been, and all that kind of stuff. And you start to get a little bit of a glimpse into what this planet might be, and, like, who used to be there, what the situation used to be like there, and, like, and then it gets really interesting. And then there's the big plot twist at the end, which I won't give away, because it's pretty cool and really effective. Even watching it now, it's still kind of crazy, because you're like, yeah. I was saying whoa at the end, because I was like, that is cool. Like, I can't believe, like, I've been, you know, I'm watching this for, like, almost 2 hours or whatever, and then it's like, yeah, it, you know, pays off, it delivers. So I think if you haven't seen Planet of the Apes, the original, you should definitely check it out, especially if you saw the most recent one, The Rise of the Planet of the Apes, or if you've seen any other Planet of the Apes movies. You should check out the original, the OG. It's pretty cool. And it still works, I think, as long as you can get past, you know, the fact that it's, you know, 43 years old, over 40 years old, then, yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. So, trying to think if there's anything else I was going to say about it. I don't know. I think that was it. But, yeah, I'll be popping in and doing these kind of these miniature bonus episodes where I talk about movies that I should have seen a long time ago and haven't seen. And I think I'm going to call the segment, Why Haven't I Seen This? Because every time I pop in one of these movies, or every time I pull up one of these movies on Netflix or whatever, I'm always like, oh man, why haven't I seen this? This is crazy. I totally should have seen this a long time ago. And it definitely feels better as a cinephile to have these movies under my belt so I can say, yeah, I've seen it. So, Yeah, both of those movies. Oh, let me mention it. Both those movies are on Netflix, so you can see both those on Netflix now. Currently, I know they kind of change their roster every once in a while, so you know you can see if it's on there or not. They might probably both be on Amazon Instant Video, but so yeah, I'll be back in probably with a normal episode next, and then I'll be popping in with another one of these next week. If you want to send me any kind of comments or questions or anything like that, give me movie suggestions, or you know, tell me about a list that you have that's like this one, about you know, movies that you want to see, you want to get around to, go ahead and send them to me, you know, opinionride@hotmail.com. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, or follow the show on Twitter @opinionriot. Send us tweets, send us comments, and like us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page now. Oh, and also this this podcast is now available on Zune and Stitcher. So if you're like streaming this from your phone and you have Zune or something like that, and you want to listen to it on there instead, then you totally can, because it's pretty much everywhere now. And yeah, make sure to like us on Facebook. It's Opinion Riot has its own Facebook page. And yeah, I think that's everything. So well, don't forget to speak your mind and go start a riot.
That was interesting.